Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
Hello and welcome to the IGN UK podcast. I am Chris and this week I'm joined by Joe.
Hello.
And Rory.
Hello.
And this week we're going to kick off with a subject inspired by an email that we received.
This is how much we respect our listeners.
Yeah. All the way from South Africa.
What?
Liam writes in and says, firstly, awesome to have Joe on the podcast.
Oh, hey.
Hello.
I've been following him and Gav since their Nintendo days.
The dark days.
My question is, what's the best game to play with non-gamers? I've tried many times to play with my dad and found all first-person games to be very confusing for the uninitiated. Games like Portal 2 left him disoriented and confused. However, I've had much better success with Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons, The Walking Dead, and most recently Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes, on your recommendation, so thanks for that. What's your go-to games for non-gamers?
Do you know what's absolutely brilliant about this is that looking at our list, he's covered 50% of the stuff we've suggested in that one email.
There's some different ones.
But it's an interesting question because as people who listen to the podcast for a while know, I used to be a big gamer. I've stopped because I just don't have time and I'm trying to read books and see all the TV shows.
Crisp.
I'm trying to watch all the freaking TV shows to talk about and write about and all the films, and I just don't feel like I've got enough time. But I have found it a little bit off-putting, some of the hardcore games, when people are saying they spent 50 hours playing or 80 hours, and they look complicated, and it's a little bit off-putting. So, yeah, let's put it to you guys, although obviously some of these were already said, but you can talk about them nevertheless.
We can. Well, I mean, the most interesting one for me is him saying Portal 2 didn't work, and Rory suggested Portal.
I suggested Portal 1 for very specific reasons.
Okay.
Portal 2 is much more advanced than Portal 1, and they introduce a lot more elements. Story's richer, but Portal 1 essentially, I don't know if you know a lot about that game, Chris?
Do,
one
yeah,
of the most popular
yeah.
games of all time.
Yep. I've interviewed one of the voice actors about it once.
Ooh, was she an opera singer?
Oh, was no. the GLaDOS
That's, yeah,
voice, yeah.
It was probably GLaDOS. Was it a woman?
No, it was Stephen Merchant.
Oh, oh yeah, right, yeah, of course. That's Portal 2,
yeah.
yeah. You probably could have just said Stephen Merchant. I was like, Stephen Merchant, the opera singer? Yeah. It's a fantastic game. The first one can be completed within 2 hours.
Two or three,
it's very short, very bite-sized.
Yep.
Getting your head around these puzzles takes a little bit of time, but as I said, it's a lot more simple than the first one. I think it's a great game to play with someone and just be in a room and work it out together. I think it's great. There's a good sense of achievement. Mm. I would definitely recommend it.
Good one.
And it inspired Dan Trachtenberg to make Portal No Escape, which led to him making 10 Cloverfield Lane.
So there
which
you
is affected
go.
All media.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's got some good twists in there, some
all
good
media
things,
being
but we won't go into that.
Games and movies, that's all I care about. So, well, he, I can't remember the name of the email.
Liam
suggested,
God, Joe. He's
sorry,
like,
sorry, Liam.
Joe's dead to me now.
Liam knows my name. He suggested The Walking Dead. I would expand that to Telltale, that developer's games, well, Walking Dead and everything after that, which are essentially story-driven adventure games that I've played with a lot of non-gamers because it's got that TV show element of someone can walk in and go, what's going on here? And then they just end up watching for 2 hours. And so they come out episodically, so it's about hour and a half, 2 hours per episode. And you get these really nicely sketched stories that just, like, go weird places that video games can take things. And so you've got, and take weird subjects. So after The Walking Dead, they did The Wolf Among Us, which is based on a series of comics called Fables. Which is sort of a fairy tale society in New York, which is really weird.
Love it.
And then Tales from the Borderlands, which took just a shooty gun game and turned it into genuinely one of the funniest games I've ever played.
Which is great because the characters in that game are already amazing. And it's great to just spend some time with them.
Yeah, exactly.
Not just like shooting weird space dogs.
It kind of recontextualizes what you expect of a game, which is shooting guys and blood and guns.
Am I right in thinking in the early days they did Back to the Future and it wasn't...
It was before they kind of nailed
what they were doing.
The Walking Dead was their moment of we've nailed this and now they've got a formula, so now they're doing Marvel and Batman.
Can they go back and redo Back to the Future?
That would be nice.
Then I'm definitely in. Or maybe just go on to Teen Wolf.
Well, that would be good. They've probably got Teen Wolf in the works.
Back to the Future 2 would be a really good one to do. Because then you could make decisions early on in the game and then later on go by somewhere where you can see yourself making the decision that you made earlier on in the game.
Oh, no.
That would be pretty cool.
That'd
be pretty good.
Fuck.
I don't know if the Western would work so well.
Well, go with it. See what they can do. See if they can improve
But no,
it.
I totally agree. That's a really accessible game. Same thing as you said, like someone could just walk into a room and be like, oh, what's going on? And the next thing you know, you've been sitting there for like 2 hours watching this whole thing unfold.
And I think the biggest problem for a lot of non-gamers is like controllers. If you're having to look at a controller to understand where stuff is, if you don't have that muscle memory, then it just becomes a hindrance to playing anything.
It was called a joystick in my day.
Well, exactly. now joysticks are gone. What are you going to do?
And there was one button.
One button?
Yeah. A red button, a joystick and a red button.
That was it.
Wow.
I just couldn't afford more buttons.
Wow. It was simple but effective. But so you're also liking Brothers that Liam suggests as well.
Yeah.
Well, sorry, Joe is.
Brothers is one of mine as well. But Brothers is an amazing little game and flew right under the radar. It came out on New Gen a few years after it came out. But essentially what it is you control two brothers in this sort of creepy Norse fantasy world going on a quest. I won't spoil why they're doing this. But it's essentially a series of puzzles that you solve with... actually, not unlike the joysticks of old, one thumbstick and one button. And each thumbstick on the controller controls a brother. So the left one is the big brother and the right one's the little brother. And then a trigger on the back controls them interacting with stuff in the world. What you can do, and what a lot of people do, is play with someone else, both holding one half of the pad.
Oh,
so they get
a
brother each, so you don't have that dissonance of trying to control two people at once. But it's... genuinely one of the saddest and most like beautifully sketched and almost wordless games that I've ever played. Like, it's just them going from one place to another and having this sort of old school fantasy quest. It's got that sort of 80s vibe of it's definitely fine for kids, but it's incredibly scary and weird at the same time.
Okay.
It's just amazing. There's nothing else like it.
That's what the best kids' stories are like.
Exactly, yeah.
Should I play this with my brother? Or will things get too emotional?
It is genuinely...
And we'll have to be like, ooh, let's go to the gym.
There's a moment.
Shake it up. You guys want a beer?
it's one of the only games where... pressing a button has nearly made me cry because of the implications of it.
God.
It's amazing.
I don't know if I can handle that.
We need to film you playing this with your brother
and see if one of you cries,
and then and then film you heading to the gym together.
It's really funny because my brother is 2 years younger than me, and I'm always like, oh, my little brother. He's like a foot taller than me, and he's built like a brick shit house. He's so huge, it's ridiculous. But I'm just like, hey, little buddy, like reaching up, like ruffling his hair and stuff. So he would definitely tear up in that game, which would be worth it.
I think you're going to suggest a game that you've probably played with your brother.
Yeah. Oh, God. My family played this game to death, like many families did growing up, and that is Mario Kart.
This is a game I've definitely played.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to hope so. Yeah. God, I'd be really worried if you hadn't played this one.
Yeah.
This game is kind of perfect for... A lot of times you play it in like social gatherings with a lot of people who don't play video games before, and it's perfect. It's very simple racing game, easy enough to use the weapons. It's just steer, launch. You never really have to like reverse or brake or slide. I mean, those are a bit more advanced. But then also, because of the mechanics of the game, the worse you're doing in the race, the better weapons you get, and you have a better chance of catching up. So often I find if you're playing with people who are not that great and they're not doing as good as people who played it a lot, they still have a fun time. They get the best weapons and they have that chance at the last lap to get something that'll push them forward. And it always seems to be quite a close game and quite tense. And I feel like that's really nice, because the last thing you want when you're playing a game for the first time is just to lose every race.
Well, it's kind of interesting that they play that balance. Like, they've got it wrong a few times, but I reckon the latest game pretty much nailed it, which is when you're a good player and you're at the front of the pack, it's a skill game. It's about taking every corner right. It's about hitting every boost. Whereas when you're at the back, it's just about seeing all the cool shit that it throws at you.
Yeah, just like crazy rainbows and turtles and
it's
stuff.
It's weird that like one race, like two ends of the race, can have two completely different experiences that suit two different kinds of games.
Yeah.
It's, like,
yeah.
it's really cleverly
it's smart.
Designed.
And that, I mean, that's what you were saying. It's one of the reasons I don't really like playing FIFA in the office, because I haven't played much FIFA for years. Everyone's playing it every lunch hour. Everyone's so good at it.
Yeah.
It's just not much fun when you're playing against someone that's
no,
going
to whip you 6-0. Literally the whole point. That's why you're playing the game.
FIFA's an intensely complicated game. I think because people play it their entire lives, they sort of forget. But it's basically like an incredibly complex action game where you're controlling 11 different people at once. There's very few games that are as insanely detailed as those.
And your final choice is in the Mario Kart universe, I would
say. I wasn't even going to put this up. Like, I was going to go for something really kind of easy and dull, like Wii Sports or something, which is just, you know, you're just moving your body. It's pretty much accessible to everyone. But I went for a different one because it's one of my favorite games of the year. We talked about it so much, so we won't go on about it for too long. But Rocket League, it is as easy as telling someone it's football with cars and they already know what they have to do and how to play the game. And that's it. It's one of those games where it takes a second to learn how to play and, you know, a month to actually master. But it doesn't really matter because a lot of the time it's just up to odds and physics and the way it's hit. It can be quite a chaotic game, and skill does come into it, a certain factor, but often it's just the ball will bounce in a crazy way and score a goal. And they're always quite intense games and quite exciting. It's the same. You can play with a bunch of friends and everyone can just pick up the controller and play. Definitely would recommend it. And it has split screen. You don't need two consoles, which is great. Same with Mario Kart as well.
That is a weird thing that's sort of disappearing, and you forget that
it's really sad.
That's the way in for a lot of people.
When Halo announced that they weren't doing split screen,
that was
4 or 5, I was
big deal.
Livid. I was furious. That's like so much of my life would be like get my friends over and we'd all play Halo split screen together, and now they're like, should I bring my Xbox so we can play Halo? It's ridiculous.
And
it's like, no, let's just do the social thing and stay at our own houses and play. Ridiculous. But definitely Rocket League. It's also so much fun.
It's also the reason no one in this office has done any work for the last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty...
Pretty much. Lunchtimes are just... we've got this rivalry going on at the minute between Alex and Krups and me and Dale, where... It's so frustrating. We'll play maybe 6 games at lunch. Me and Dale will win 5 of those games. And then the last one, every time, just under pressure, we crumble. And Alex and Krups will just clean up. And they'll be like, oh, I guess we're reigning champions every single lunchtime. And of course, because it's Alex, he'll win a game and he'll be like, you know what, guys, that's lunch. That's lunch. Yep. Everyone back to work. Or if we win the last game, he'll be like, we can squeeze in one more. We can squeeze in one more before we go back.
Have you ever heard the phrase "quit while you're ahead"?
Yes.
Use it.
Yeah, but then
what
get,
is?
Get
what if you could get further ahead?
What is the Yorg?
The Yorg is a very strange game. It is.
It looks like a typo.
It does look like a typo. It's spelled YAHWG, and essentially, it's a social choose-your-own-adventure game.
Right.
So. It's not unlike Telltale games in that it's story-based, and that makes it accessible. Essentially, you are told that you are a character in a sort of medieval fantasy town, and in, I think it's 12 weeks, the Yorg is going to hit. And you don't know what it is, but you know it's disastrous.
That's
and you
cool.
get these
I
little
like that.
Clues that you have to prepare for this huge disaster that's coming. So up to 4 of you choose a character each, and each turn in the game is a week of time. So you've got 12 turns, and you just travel around the town, choosing different districts and places in it, and doing various little jobs that tell little bits of story. So it might be...
About the Yorg?
Not about the Yorg, but about your character just helping out, protecting people, or... So it can be anything from fighting crime on the back alleys to just working in a pub. And it gives you...
It's just London life, isn't it?
Kind of is, yeah. That's just how we roll. And it's like... So you'll get these little stories. So you might be working in the pub and a fight breaks out, and that boosts you help break it up, and that boosts like your strength.
Gotcha.
Or it gets really weird. You can go and like chop down wood in the woods and then come across like a wood nymph who leads you on this like merry tale, and you get like blessed with some magic. And it's basically just about building up your stats. And then at the end of these 12 weeks, everyone's stats are sort of plugged in. And it tells the tale of what happened when the Yorg hit and what your character did based on that.
So is it different every time, depending on your stats?
Okay. So you can either, like, this entire town can get leveled and your character can... Like, if your character has spent too much time in the pub, they become, like, a drunk and just ruin everything for everyone and the town is destroyed. Or you can, if you've all done really well, through a combination of luck and knowing what you need to be good at, you can create, like, you can save the town. And so it tells this really strange interlocking story of all these people working around this town and, like, in this really sort of strange and lovely way. It's an amazing little thing. I think it's, like, £4 or £5, and just to sit down and play through once takes about half an hour, and you get your own personal story amongst your group of friends, and it's amazing.
That's really cool. So you know what thing. You know what the Yaug is?
I do know what the Yaug is.
You're telling me after this podcast?
Yeah, we'll play the Yaug.
Okay, great. We can Yaug it up.
It'll be intense.
Awesome. Well, those are our ideas for gamers games to play with non-gamers.
Yeah.
But if you have any ideas, write in and let us know. IGN_UKfeedback@IGN.com.
I think, crucially, we need to know what you would play.
That's what I was just going to ask. Which one would you choose from that list?
I quite fancy giving a Telltale game a go.
Yep. I think that's a good call.
It have to be on the right sort of subject.
Yeah, but there's millions of them now, so there's always something on a subject.
And I've been not playing Rocket League for a reason, because I feel like if I start, I won't stop. But I am very tempted by Rocket League. That's my kind of sports game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, thanks for the choices, guys. Right, let's go into some good stuff. Some breaking rad. And I'm going to talk about something that's a bit odd, but something I'm really interested in. Lately in the States, they've started turning musicals into live TV productions, which is how TV really started. The big dramas that were on in the 50s and 60s that would be big productions would be live on television in America. And so they've tried to bring that back with stuff like The Sound of Music, Peter Pan, The Wiz, and Grease. None of which screened over here, I don't think, or if they did, they weren't live, and none of which I was that interested in. But this one's got me interested, A Few Good Men. Have you seen A Few Good Men?
I have.
I have not.
I actually know part of the monologue that Jack Nicholson does.
Is it the one about people standing on walls with guns?
Oh,
is it that one?
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to do it?
Oh, of course I do. I have neither the time or the inclination to explain myself to a man who rises and sleeps under the blanket of freedom in which I provide, and then questions the matter in which I provide it. I would rather you... Oh, no.
Oh, no.
I lost it.
I thought that was you acting.
Oh, no. Oh, so good. I would rather you just said thank you and went on your way. Otherwise, I suggest you pick up a weapon and stand a post. Either way, I don't give a damn what you think you are entitled to.
That's kind of amazing.
That was one of the, like, I love Jack Nicholson. He's one of my favorite actors of all time. And that whole speech was just, like, mind-blowing for me. Just watching him, I was, like, entranced.
It was the perfect role for him.
So it absolutely was.
It was a 1989 play, which I didn't know. I went to see it in the cinema when it came out. I didn't know it was based on a play. It was the first thing, one of the first things Aaron Sorkin wrote, and he did it when he was like a kid. Like, I'm pretty sure he was at uni.
I'm just like, you son of a bitch, you're ruining it for the rest of us.
He did it when he was 12.
Yeah. It was a military courtroom drama, and then they turned it into a movie that starred Tom Cruise and Jack Nicholson, and it was so heavily hyped. This is this movie where the young pretender is taking on, you know, this big bear of a superstar, and Cruise held his own, but, you know, Nicholson won the Oscar and just nails it at the end.
Yeah.
It's such an entertaining film, and they're going to do it live on the telly with Sorkin kind of rewriting the script. And that's one I wish they would air over here.
Yeah.
But so who do you think they should cast in the roles?
Ooh.
Because,
well, so you want them to recreate that dynamic. You want it to be the young actor versus the
old veteran
one.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. The thing is, actors seem to come through so fully formed now. There's never, like, there's not that, like, teen star feel anymore. I guess, like, I don't know. Is Tom Hiddleston new enough? I don't know whether he can do an American accent. But, like...
But he even seems quite mature. I think there's something about
I think you're
Tom
right.
Cruise
nothing...
that, like, is quite childish and naive about him.
The ones I write down, I thought Ryan Gosling for the Tom Cruise role.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like a cocky young upstart. And then Bryan Cranston for...
Oh, well, that's perfect. That is actually
Bryan
perfect.
Cranston would be great.
Because you couldn't do it the way Nicholson does it, which is just shouting him down.
Yeah.
You'd have to do it in a... You'd have to go a different direction.
Quiet and fury.
Think, yeah.
Yeah.
He can do that.
I am the one that ordered the cold red. It would be perfect, yeah.
But yeah, anyway, that's going to air. When is it going to air? In 2017. Our casting to be announced soon. Later. So anyway, yeah, I just thought that was a really interesting thing.
Do it as a Starsky and Hutch style comedy version instead. Have like Andy Samberg versus Will Ferrell.
Feels more like incredible. A sketch than a 2-hour TV event. Rory, you want to talk about something?
Oh, I do. I absolutely understand. This is an anime. It's one of the most popular animes in history. It's called Full Metal Alchemist, and it's just been announced that it's getting a live action movie.
That's always a worry.
It is always a worry. And I think, like, anime live action movies are entering the realm along with superhero movies and video game movies. I think we're in a great spot now with superhero movies. I'm hoping we're going to be at that spot with video game movies when Assassin's Creed comes mm-hmm. out and okay. Warcraft and mm-hmm. things like that. I'm very optimistic about these sort of things. And I'm trying to bring that optimism to live-action anime movies.
Trying to. That's ominous.
This is a story that lends itself really well to a full-on movie. Mm. So to give you a brief description, it's about these two brothers who their mother unfortunately passes away, and they decide that they're going to try and bring her back to life using alchemy. Like, as children. Mm-hmm.
She comes back just terrible, as some gold.
Terrible. It goes incredibly wrong. One of the brothers loses an arm and a leg, and the other one, his body's destroyed.
What?
And his,
what does that mean?
He's completely, like, destroyed, but...
Is he just a head?
Well, the older brother manages to transfer his soul into a suit of armor.
Well, of course.
So the whole series, it kind of, like, moves forward with these two brothers... trying to find a way to get their human bodies back. And it's just, I know, like, people have a lot of, like, ideas of what an anime is just based on, you know, the general
it's usually
insaneness.
Souls being put in armor for me.
But this is, it's like, it's so deep. The relationship between the brothers is so strong. The characters are incredible. The story's great. It's one of those ones where there's this whole overarching story that all ties together with little pieces. And I think if this is done well, it could be an incredible movie.
So is it a Japanese production or is this an American
production? This is a Japanese production.
Okay.
Yeah. Which, can go either way. I feel like the cultural differences make those movies either a hit or a miss, because there's been some live action Japanese ones that are really, really terrible just because it's not intended for us as an audience. Like the Attack on Titan films.
Yeah.
I think they had a better reception in Japan than they did over here. Mm. They just didn't work as well as the movies were used to, with like a certain level of visual effects and cinematography and that sort of stuff. It was a bit jarring. But equally, there's another popular anime called Death Note. And it's getting a Western live-action movie.
Yeah, but they've spent years developing that. I've actually read and watched Death Note.
You have?
Yeah.
Great series,
amazing,
right?
Absolutely
amazing. Incredible.
A guy I know was working on a script for it a few years ago, a guy who's now writing with Shane Black. And, it's never gone into production. And it's like, this seems like a no-brainer.
It's the same with that. Absolutely. There was that Akira live-action that they've been trying to make for years as well. Wasn't that Keanu Reeves or something?
Yeah, the budget got out of hand on that one. I can imagine.
Well, they've got, so at the minute, in terms of Western movies, they have Death Note in production and Ghost in the Shell as well.
I wrote it down because I want to get your thoughts on this, because obviously... Then finally making it, which is awesome, but it's Scarlett Johansson is the lead, and it's the westernization and the whitification of.
I guess it goes both ways. I think it's you could easily have a Japanese live action version of the movie, and it's the same. So, for example,
a Japanese actor.
Yeah, it's true. But like
they've got Takeshi Kitano who's going to be in it, who's a terrific, brilliant actor. But yeah, I mean, it's just there's gonna be so much criticism of this when it comes to, you know, the trailer dropping and people going to see it.
I think that's like one of the problems as well with the anime crowd, is they're really protective of their shows and their passions. And I think this is gonna come through in the movies. Unless these movies are a success, you're probably gonna see a lot of online hate and bad.
Yeah, but you just need a studio to have the balls to go ahead and cast someone that isn't as famous,
make a
good movie, have a hit, and then. But there's just fear in Hollywood. No one wants to invest $150 million in a film without, an A-lister that is going to guarantee bums on seats. So it's, we'll see. I just hope they make a good movie.
What's interesting, going back to your A Few Good Men thing, I was thinking when you were talking about, all the hype was about, you know, watching two actors go at it. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen anymore. No one wants to watch acting. They want to watch just people they like the faces of walking yeah. around. Like, it's such a strange shift in like business strategy to create that kind of stuff. I don't really get why we're there.
Yeah, well, event. I mean, that was an event movie, but event movies are only the special effects ones now,
yeah,
really.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, sounds like you've pitched it to me well. I actually want to see this movie now.
It's a great show. I'd recommend watching it. And it's one of those shows as well that's maybe like 20 or 30 episodes long. It's not one of those insanely... You can get through it in you know, a week or two. I definitely recommend it. And hopefully, fingers crossed, it'll be a good movie as well.
Yeah. Batman.
Yes, I'm going to go weirder. So I still haven't seen Batman vs. Superman. I'm not sure I have any intention
to
be honest. Yeah.
But if anyone wants to know anything about Batman vs. Superman, we have a lot of content. Yes. So that's why we're not talking about it this week.
No.
It's been nonstop on the site.
Everyone's
probably sick of it. They don't need another... like Batman v Superman discussion.
No,
well, I'm doing that later today on the Superhero Show.
Well, of course.
Oh God,
I'm going tangential with this.
Yeah.
So basically, I'm just going to bring up a cool thing that I've done. I've heard the only detail I know about Batman versus Superman is there is a bit where Batman hits a big tire with a hammer for a while.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I know.
Yeah, it's pretty hot.
So, it sounds it.
Let's not beat around the bush.
And so I got to thinking, what other weird things has Batman done? And I've compiled a short quiz.
Okay.
Right? I'm excited. So I'm genuinely
these are
excited.
Real things that Batman has done in his history as a comic book character.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll ask you a question, and then there'll be three multiple choice answers.
Okay.
We'll start simple. In one issue, the Rainbow Batman wears different coloured suits every night for one issue. But why? A. To distract from Robin's arm. B. To get invited to an evil fashion show. Or C. To detective baddies can't see certain colours like dogs with purple.
Evil fashion show, I think.
What was the first one?
To distract from Robin's arm.
That's so weirdly specific. I don't know what that
means.
I'm
going to go to distract from Robin's arm.
It is to distract from Robin's arm. Robin injures his arm fighting someone, and Batman's way of protecting his identity is not to say, Robin, recuperate for a few nights. It's, I'm going to wear pink and yellow suits instead.
We've all done it.
Yes.
We've all done it.
Yeah, I've worn... Well, we were just on a trip and I wore crazy shoes to distract from all the cuts and bruises you got in our fights.
Oh, yeah, in those Swedish bar fights.
In our Swedish fights.
At the evil fashion show.
By the way, I picked that answer because I didn't think you'd make up to distract from Munza.
No,
I thought that was too weird.
That's why I said that was the easy one.
I should have just gone for it.
Okay. After a major trauma, Batman begins to see... A. Joker's face on the back of everyone's heads. B. The bat symbol replaced by a big winking emoji-style face. Or C. A tiny floating homunculus version of himself.
I'm going to go with C.
I'm going to go with A.
It is C. You're
oh, you're joking
it.
Me!
There is a character called Batmite who has repeated...
You know this, don't you?
Yeah.
I thought it might be Batmite.
Yeah, so...
He's not the most popular character in the Bat universe.
He appeared as like an interdimensional character for years, and then they got rid of him. And then in it's Grant Morrison's Batman RIP arc, there's loads of weird shit happens in that arc. Like, Batman has his brain turned off, and he has to... He has a backup personality called the Batman of Zur-En-Arr.
Oh,
and
he's
a sort of tramp superhero for a while. It's amazing.
Wouldn't it be so great if Batmite,
yeah.
appeared in like Justice League? Like a tiny
so
little
good.
Ben Affleck be like, hey, bigger Batman.
Yeah, because it's like a tiny little like creepy this elf thing with a massive head but in a bat suit. It's so good.
That sounds
Batmite
great.
Is weird as hell.
Have fun, Ben.
Question three. Batman gets addicted to Bane's super juice, Venom, and A. grows a massive beard, B. keeps uncontrollably laughing at weird times, and C. meditates in a locked bat cave for 30 days.
Oh, I really hope it's A.
You can go first.
I've gone first every time, though, and I've lost.
I went first the last time.
A. The beard.
I want to go C.
I want a bat beard.
It's a trick question. He does all of those things.
Ah, nice.
Whoa, so I get a point.
He has some... That's like a whole weird thing where he gets addicted to drugs, but they just happen to be Bane's drugs and make him really angry and strong. It's very strange. Question four. The Riddler once tricked Batman into A, punching a baby, B, cutting a baby's throat, or C, listening to the Equals hit Baby Come Back on repeat in the Batmobile for a whole issue.
B is way too dark. What was the first one? Punching a baby?
Punching a baby.
Would they put that in a comic? I think maybe C. I've gone for what I think is right, and I'm not going to do that anymore. C. I think it's C.
I'm going to go A.
You're both wrong. It is cutting a baby's throat.
Jesus, that's horrible.
It is in the process of a tracheotomy. The Riddler tricks him into thinking he's pushed a ping pong ball down a baby, and then Batman cuts it out, but he hasn't. It's really weird and dark.
Yeah, that is horrible.
Batman's creepy. And our final question, this is quite a long one. So in an issue where, well, this happens... Batman travels back in time with Superman to see his identical Civil War general ancestor and nearly gets burnt at the stake for being an 18th century witch because Superman is jealous that he stole a kiss from a nearly drowned woman. But who tries to save Batman and how? So let me point out all of that first bit, that's just true. That's taken as read.
Yeah.
Who tries to save Batman and how? A. Abraham Lincoln by unexpectedly chopping a cherry tree onto Superman. B. Benjamin Franklin by getting lightning to hit the town stocks. Or C, General Ulysses S. Grant by getting an army to invade the town.
Don't think it's me, Grant. I don't think a tree would stop Superman. Unless it's a kryptonite tree. B it is.
Okay, I was thinking B, but as you've gone for B, I'm going to go for C.
It is B.
Benjamin
Franklin getting lightning to hit the town stocks. Although it doesn't work because Batman just stops the lightning in the air with his hands.
Right. That sounds quite Back to the Future to me, that one.
Yeah, it does. Very weird.
I like that one.
So, yeah, that's Batman's weirdest moments in a quiz.
I like it. Good work, Joe.
Thank you.
Rory, your final...
Moving along with really, really weird moments. Mm. So me and Joe were on a work trip the other day to Sweden. And just before I got on my flight, there's a band that I really like called Anamanaguchi. And recently, they did a press release to GameSpot announcing a video game that they've been allegedly working on for 3 years.
A first-person shooter RPG.
Yeah. And now this is just a band that, granted, they make some like video game theme music.
Yeah, they did Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Yeah, they did Scott Pilgrim versus the World. They've had some songs on Rock Band and stuff. But just out of the blue, they're like, "Oh, surprise everyone, we've been working on a video game for the last 3 years that star us as characters in the game." It's the weirdest thing in the world. So they did a whole press release. There were some photos from the game. Everyone was getting quite excited. And then all of a sudden, the band had sort of a meltdown on Twitter. And things got really ugly, and they started screenshotting photos, conversations between them and the developer, a company called NHX, just of all this like awful stuff, all this back and forth. Then they started insulting the developer and talking about how bad the game was and was a waste of their lives and all this horrible stuff. And then the last thing they did was just go, screw it, here it is, here's the game, and just uploaded a demo of the game to show investors.
Well, yeah, originally that it's like E3 2015 investor demo or something, it says in the corner.
With like a really weird PDF document to give to investors about the plans. So already this whole thing was really, really strange. So of course, what do? You download the game and try playing it. And at the start, it just feels like a really terrible game. A terrible game, like really bad graphics. It barely kind of works. It's just first person.
All the backdrops are like pixelated JPEGs of mountain ranges and stuff.
You can still download
like
this game, by the way, and I definitely recommend that you do, just for the experience.
It's the only thing on Anamanaguchi's Twitter account
at
this point.
They deleted all their tweets and
just
left
this
one.
They've just got one tweet left.
It's so weird. So essentially, you kind of progress through the first level till you get to a point where there's this goblin creature and there's a gun on the floor and you have to shoot the goblin creature. But when you pick it up and try and shoot it, the game locks up and freezes. And it says, whatever, subject not found, all the code error comes down and gives you like a list of commands you can do, like a help, a search, a load level, some things like that. And if you experiment around a little bit, you realize the only thing that you can actually load is the sandbox level, which is essentially where the developers just go to muck about with everything that's in the game. It's just a pile of trash. But you go there and there's this creature called Frug, who's like a robot.
Frug's amazing.
And you kind of... pick him up, and you just think, like, this is just going to be a weird glitchy area. And all of a sudden, like, he starts talking to you about the band and the developer and the problems. And the more you explore this weird, just like little glitchy area, you start finding these cassette tapes on the floor, and you can pick up the tapes and put them into Frog the Robot, and he starts playing music. And
he's like Gertie from Duncan Jones's Moon. He's just a robot with like a series of badly drawn emojis for faces, yeah. Which is really odd. It's an amazing thing.
Yeah, and so like the more you explore, you find these tapes and you start finding really weird things. Like there was a crack on the floor and we opened up a secret passageway to go down into a building, and you find all these weird things. And like,
it's all
more
full
tapes.
Of like fan art by their actual fans with links to their Tumblr pages and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
and it's so strange. And there's all these kind of puzzles you have to work out. And essentially, what it comes down to is that the band, I think, I don't know who they're working with, this developer NHS, but the idea is that the whole issues and the problems was fabricated, and that this is the game, the sandbox is the game, and they have a whole album of music
or like
released inside
like,
of this game.
There's at least 30 tracks in there that are really hard to get out of it. Like, you have to do a really complicated process just to export one MP3, and then it just crashes the game and you have to do it all again. So,
but we were laughing as well, because you start to work all this out and you get really into it, because you're like, we need to find the puzzles, we need to get the tapes. And then it gets to this end point where you put whatever tape you want into this mechanism, and when you flip the switch, you can export that MP3. So it's quite clever. You have to go back and play it to get the tracks. But then it turns out that every time someone flips that switch, the robot Frog's memory is erased.
And he like does this like existential lament where he's like, how many times have you flipped the switch on me? Like he's freaking out that he's lost his memory.
He starts getting really scared.
Times.
He starts thinking, which is quite scary as well, because if you have to do that to get the tapes, maybe you have done it 10 times.
Yeah.
And then every time he's like, how many times have you flipped this switch? It's like, does our friendship mean nothing? And you're like, I'm sorry, Frog, I need this track. And you'd like flip it, and he's like, and the game, like, it's really weird.
That's crazy.
But it's like, it's the most innovative way I've ever heard of someone releasing music before.
Yeah. It's an album hidden inside a video game, hidden inside another video game, hidden inside a fake news story.
It's incredible.
It's unbelievable.
I think even if, you know, the music isn't your style, it's definitely worth, you can download for free PC and Mac on Anamanaguchi's Tumblr and online, and it's just a really fun experience and really interesting. I definitely recommend it.
I'm pretty convinced it's by this group of weird developers called the Arcane Kids, who did a thing last year called Sonic Dreams Collection, where they claim to have found a load of like broken demos of Sonic games that they'd hacked in and found. And it was just like a strange art project about like making Sonic do creepy things in video games.
Yeah,
it's amazing, and they seem so closely linked.
It must be. I'd be really similar, because I don't think NHX is a real company.
No, I think they are made up.
Yeah.
Well, forget these games to play with non-gamers. I'm going to play that one.
Yeah,
it's weird. But it is definitely fun.
It's great.
Well, that was Breaking Rad, but we're going to move on to Breaking Sad.
Oh,
no. I don't know if we've ever used that before.
I don't think so.
I made it up.
That's a good one, because sometimes we have the just off the worst ones. It's like a minute going in, and we're like, should we be, I don't know, what was it, Bum or Rum?
Yeah. Bum was one of the ones that kicked it all off, really. Bum or
Bum
Rum.
Bum and Rum, but I didn't know it. Yeah. I didn't know which one was good.
Yeah, it's very Gav,
Rum's
that one.
Rum's good. Come
Rum's good. I'm going to keep it on a musical tip. But actually, the more I think about it, I don't know if this is good or bad news.
Okay.
So Oscar-winning composer Hans Zimmer is retiring from the superhero scene. He told the BBC that he did Batman Begins with Chris Nolan 12 years ago, The Dark Knight, 3 movies to you, it was 11 years of my life, and he's just done. So he will have done. So I thought this is a sad thing, because I really like his scores.
Yeah.
But equally, if he's done 5 of them, that's a lot, isn't it, for any one person to be doing. And he's probably explored everything he wanted to. I mean, I really like the way that the Dark Knight scores kind of build and embellish on each other.
Yeah.
And equally, like, Batman v Superman, I think really nicely takes the Man of Steel score, which I thought was really good. I like listening to that when I'm writing. And took it to another place. So maybe it's not a bad thing that he's moving on.
He's just left a good backdrop.
But equally, I think he's been a blessing and a curse to the genre. Because although I really like his scores, they're kind of these weird percussive, you know, they have this great momentum to them, but they're totally different to what John Williams did with Superman, where it had a proper hero theme.
Yeah.
That you could whistle or you could sing in your head.
I think it's...
But I guess that's...
And no one does that anymore. Everyone does a Hans Zimmer. That's what you want for your trailer, for your movie, is a Hans Zimmer style score.
Mm.
And so we don't have those iconic themes anymore. We have these kind of driving...
Well, the one thing we have from Hans Zimmer's superhero stuff is Batman's like... That's all I can think of. That's the whole theme tune now.
I think it like... The last time I heard a movie that had that sort of John Williams style, like superhero, that little motif, you know, that would kick in was, I think it was Captain America, the first Avenger, and it had a motif that would play, like when he brings the soldiers back from the war and you see him walking up and it plays that little motif and you're just like, yeah, this is a good feeling.
I hate that scene.
You hate that scene? Oh, I love it. Love it. But I think with Zimmer, it's a little different because it's just, as you said, I feel like the DC movies, like that's the tone of it, is this like percussive build up, like quite dark. I think if you had a scene where maybe like Batman is fighting someone and it like kicks in with this melody that you know, they don't really have those moments.
Sure. No. Agreed.
I think the closest I kind of got to that was, without giving too much away, a moment in the end of Batman v Superman where something happens and a group of people are together and this riff kicks in, and then it's just as you said, it's this like melody and you get really excited and that sort of builds up the moment.
Yeah, no, I quite agree, but something like Ant-Man or Guardians of the Galaxy could have a fun theme that you whistle along to.
Guardians of the Galaxy especially.
I feel you could do with one,
But I mean, equally, it has a fantastic soundtrack.
It does, but like, I mean, there is other music in that. It would be nice to have like a proper theme in amongst all of that great license
stuff. I interviewed him last week, actually, which was a real like ambition of mine, and he was lovely and mad and really eccentric and odd and just great. And he was saying that he nearly didn't take the Man of Steel job because he didn't want to step into John Williams' shoes. He said it was a really terrifying thing to do, but. Have you got a favourite Hans Zimmer score?
I don't think you can... superhero score or general?
No, just general one.
I mean, you can't really look past Inception. That like, changed all music in trailers for blockbusters for what's still going.
Yeah.
Everything still has the big horns.
There's that signature track as well in Inception that, you hear it everywhere now. It's like people throw it on all their internet videos, which really sucks because I loved it.
Yeah.
And it's the one, you know, the piano one that starts really slow and just builds and builds and builds till it's just full orchestra booming. Incredible track. Absolutely incredible. That's my favorite of all of his pieces.
I got to see Interstellar with his live score last year.
Really?
At the Royal Albert Hall. That was amazing. It was him on stage beforehand talking with Nolan and Kip Thorne, and Stephen Hawking introduced them.
Oh, that's amazing.
And I spoke to him about it the other day. He was saying just hearing Stephen Hawking say his name was just, he said it was mind-blowing. But the whole Chris Nolan, you know, the partnership they've got has been really good.
Yeah.
Two of my favourites are Gladiator and Pirates. I think Gladiator, it's two scores that really help make the movies.
Yeah,
I think, and the Pirates theme is better than the films. I think, especially
He did the Pirates theme.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's a perfect example of a theme that literally, everyone was like,
that's a superhero theme.
It is. Yeah,
I heard that from another room in my parents' house the other day. I was like, yeah, someone's watching Pirates.
Yeah,
immediately.
It's great.
There's two from the 90s I'd recommend: Backdraft and Crimson Tide. Kind of 90s thrillers, but they had, it was when he was doing a slightly different thing, but they really remember, they became the theme, that became the scores that then everyone else used on their trailers.
Yep. Oh yeah,
classic.
Which meant that he hit on something. There's one thing that I have a movie scores playlist on my Spotify, and there's one that I've stopped doing it now because I've got something, but there's one that whenever it comes on I think, wow, that's such a fantastic piece of music. I've really, what score is that? And I look at it and it's Hans Zimmer. I'm like, oh, cool, it's Hans Zimmer. And then it's from The Holiday.
Oh, wow.
The romantic, you know, this film that I hate with a passion, but it just happens to have this theme that I found. That
really
I love.
Says something about the music if you to test the movie.
And finally on this one, I don't know, did either of you remember the TV quiz show Going for Gold with Henry Kelly?
I don't think I ever
saw it. Okay, you need to check out that theme tune afterwards, because I found out the other day that Hans Zimmer did the theme tune for this in the 1980s. And it's a proper like tea time quiz show that your mum would watch. And it's really naff, and it's really awful, and it's nothing like what he does. But you know what, once you hear it, you cannot get it out of your head.
I love it.
So
we'll
embed it in the podcast story on the site if people want to check it out.
That'd be a really fun thing to see, like you know, like early compositions by incredibly famous composers.
Yeah, but he was on TV being interviewed this week, and he was saying people still come up to him and bring it up. Like,
really?
Yeah, he said he met someone famous, and he was all excited to hear what this person was going to say to him, and he was like, "You did the guy for Goldie."
I love the thought of you doing a phone interview with him and him being like, "Oh, hang on a second," and he puts you on hold, and it's just Hans Zimmer music, just like for like 45 minutes, and then he'd be like, "Did you like that?" Yeah.
It's like finding out that like blankety blank was like Wagner or something. It's really weird. It
doesn't make any sense.
If you mounted a photograph of him on a wall, would it be a Zimmer frame?
Oh,
love it.
Okay,
hello. Love it.
Moving
love
on.
It. That's why people listen to this podcast.
Joe, you have a question.
Yeah, I want someone to explain to me what the hell is going on with the Jungle Book movie or movies. Because
there's two movies.
Yeah, there are two movies, right?
Coming out a year apart, I think.
And so one's Disney and one's Rudyard Kipling.
Yeah, so this year we're getting the Disney. The Disney cartoon was based on Rudyard Kipling, but they changed a lot and turned into a musical.
Mm.
And Jon Favreau is now, he's finished doing a CGI live action version of it.
Right.
And so it's going to have the songs,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to have, it's got a really big name cast playing the animals, and then just a little kid they've cast, who's a cute little kid. I've seen some footage from it. He's the cutest little kid.
So these are going to be realistic CGI animals singing show tunes?
These are photoreal animals singing Bare Necessities and I Want to Be Like You.
Wow.
This is great.
They've cast...
Someone needs to like cut that movie with footage from The Revenant. That would be amazing.
Scarlett Johansson plays Car. She's got a great voice.
Okay.
Ben Kingsley is Bagheera. Christopher Walken is King Louis.
That's brilliant.
I've seen some of that footage, and that's
so
kind
good.
Of crazy when they go into his palace and all his, you know, he's got his monkey army with him.
Mm. There's some weird stuff in that movie.
Yeah,
it's going to
really
be
strange. What about those vultures that are the Beatles? Like, I want that back.
Bill Murray is Baloo.
Yeah.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect.
And the one problem I've had with it so far, actually, and I'm having this problem with a lot of films at the moment, is Idris Elba.
Mm.
Who I'm a fan of, but he's Shere Khan. And for some reason, I could suspend my disbelief when I was watching footage of all these other huge stars.
Mm.
But as soon as he rolled up with his Cockney accent and his sort of Brixton voice, it took me out of the movie. I think his voice is a bit wooden. And he's in Zootropolis, and he's going to be in Finding Dory this summer. So I don't know what kind of deal he's done with Disney.
It's just in all of it.
How was it with Zootropolis? Was it jarring?
It took me out of it a little bit. I just feel like I'm watching
Luther.
Idris Elba voice a character. Yeah, and so maybe it's just as a personal thing.
I really don't rate Idris Elba. Like, he's amazing as Stringer Bell, but I've never fully enjoyed another role he's done after that. It's really strange.
I liked Luther, and I don't like Luther anymore. And
I'm not. I
don't
mean
to be Bond, but anyway, I hope that's, you know, it looks really interesting. Like. I wasn't too bothered about the film, but just seeing it in terms of what they've achieved artistically, it's really, really impressive.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, Idris Elba was the reason I brought this up, because me and my brother had like almost a full argument about who was playing Shere Khan, because he was going, Idris Elba's Shere Khan. I was like, no, it's Cumberbatch. I've heard him do the voice, because he was on Kermode and Mayo doing a Shere Khan impression a while back. And I was like, he sounds amazing. And we had this massive bust-up. And we both looked it up and found the respective films we were talking about it, and never saw that there was any connection between them.
So Serkis is doing what will probably be a much more brutal version of it. It's him directing for the first time.
Okay.
And it's not coming out till way after. So I went to a presentation where Favreau was talking about it, and he was like, they're going to be different. They're going to, you know, as a musical.
Mm.
So
how does that happen, though? How did two places just go, yeah, Jungle Book, let's do it?
I think that Circus announced his first, and then Disney were like, we, you know, they're remaking all their films in live action, and I think they saw an opportunity to get it done, get
which
it out
one,
there first.
Which one do we think is going to be better?
I'm looking forward to Circuses more, just because it will be different.
Like, yeah.
I love the Jungle Book. Jungle Book's amazing. I don't want a new version of the Disney one, particularly. Like,
I don't like
apart
the story.
From Christopher Walken.
I don't like the story to the Jungle Book.
I don't,
but it's got two of my favourite songs.
Yeah,
so,
Bare Necessities.
And I Want to Be Like You. So I'm a bit indifferent, if I'm honest.
Yeah, It'd be strange.
Do you think with the photorealism, they're going for the, like, that Avatar appeal? Like, people will say, you have to see this movie because it looks incredible, rather than the actual story.
I think
that
there is an element of people trying to wow people.
Yeah. When's it out? Which is how real it looks.
It's out soon, actually. I'm supposed to be interviewing Favreau in a couple of weeks, so...
So there's pictures of them with their CGI.
Yeah. I think they'll start cranking out pictures now. I mean, I think it could be a huge hit, but...
How did Cinderella do last year?
It was massive. It was absolutely huge.
No one ever talks about it.
The live-action Cinderella?
Yeah.
That's out.
That came out last year, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's part of Disney's new weird schedule where they have, like... They sort of have their down-home American...
Their Disney cinematic universe.
Thing. And then they have their remake, and then they have a Marvel film, and then they have a Star Wars film.
But these films are the only blockbusters getting released with female lead characters.
That's
and
true.
Really strong, interesting characters. So I think it's brilliant what they're doing. Maleficent wasn't... I don't think was Disney. But yeah, Cinderella, and they've got a bunch more coming. So.
Oh, I can't wait for Beauty and the Beast. That one will be incredible.
I watched Cinderella, and it was a really nice film.
Mm.
Really well done.
Great.
Cool, and finally, Rory.
Yeah.
What's this all about?
It's some reported information about the new Call of Duty game coming in 2016. And, you know, new Call of Duty, everyone is now pushing towards going back to World War II, going back to Vietnam, taking it back. We've got Destiny, we've got The Division, we've got all these games where it's kind of set in the future, high tech. So everyone's like, let's strip it back. Let's go back to World War II. Let's, you know, make a real gritty, like, first-person shooter again. COD 2016 will allegedly be even further into the future than the previous one.
It's the very far future, apparently.
So far that it will allegedly include space fights.
Just like...
I don't know who's asking for this.
No.
I honestly don't. The last one that came out, Black Ops 3, people have said this new one makes Black Ops 3 feel like the Stone Age. Now, Black Ops 3 has people with prosthetic robot arms.
Shooting lightning
and lasers. If that's the Stone Age, it's unbelievable. I'm getting quite nervous now that because of the success of Destiny as a game, that all these FPS games are now trying to gravitate towards something that a time zone that allows this level of customization and like abilities that extend usual human body.
Mm.
When sure, that's a great thing in terms of if you want to do a lot of DLC and microtransactions and, you know, leveling up and different guns, but you could equally do that in the setting of a World War II shooter.
Well, the strange thing about it is, like, the reason people who like Destiny is because it's dumb fantasy space opera. They're all, like, mad. They're all warlocks and magicians, and there's aliens and stuff. Like, future Call of Duty isn't going to be able to do that. They're not going to have, like, gritty, hard-boiled soldiers going, now I shoot fireballs. Like, it's just not going
to
happen.
It's getting weird, and it's getting to the point now where I'll see screenshots from COD games, and I'll think it's Destiny.
Mm.
Or Halo or something. And it's the world's becoming a lot smaller, and I don't want to lose that variety. I would love to occasionally hop on to like a World War I, World War II shooter.
Yeah.
I think that would be incredible.
Well,
fantastic.
I mean, the other rumor is that Battlefield 5 is in World War I, which would be great. Like, because that's such a weird war to try and play with. Like, what do you do with that?
I know.
I want to see someone
try it. But it's interesting.
It.
It's definitely different.
Like, it's somewhere I've never been and probably don't want to be. But, you know,
now, again, this is just industry insider information.
Yeah.
The person who made these claims has been right in the past about a lot of information.
Yeah.
So we don't know yet. But... I don't know. I'm not entirely sold yet. I'd have to be pretty wild by some gameplay mechanics to justify going into space battles again.
It'll be announced at E3, so we'll find out.
We will. We will. So stay tuned. We will have it covered.
Right, on to feedback.
Yeah.
First piece.
I think I've got number
one.
Is it me? Yep.
I've got number two.
So this is from Adam.
That means you're second, by the way.
That means I'm second.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Joe, you, me. Right? No.
What?
Joe...
Bye. Just let Joe speak.
Bloody hell. Hey guys, I've been really enjoying your Prepare to Try series.
Oh yeah.
And it has inspired me to tackle a Souls game soon.
Nice.
You've
congratulations.
Inspired someone. How do you feel about
inspired?
This is like a feedback
loop. He's inspired me.
I'm not normally patient enough for those kind of games, but I'm willing to learn and put the effort in. I wondered, should I attempt Bloodborne, which I have a copy of, or wait for Dark Souls 3? I'm curious to know whether Rory will be giving either of these a shot after completing Dark Souls.
Great questions. Yeah, we've had some really awesome responses to the series. Really, really positive. So positive that we should not stop it. And we are already in talks about what we're going to be doing next. Whether it be Bloodborne is one of the games, and Dark Souls 3 is another one of the games we're thinking about doing. From what I know about Bloodborne, we were talking about it yesterday quite a lot, that it's a bit more fast-paced and a bit more...
It's about more about aggression than defense, from what I understand.
Yeah. But equally, you know, I think they're both fantastic games. I have heard a lot about Dark Souls 3. I am unbelievably excited to hop into that world. I think maybe Dark Souls 3 might be a good one if you have the money to get it, because it's always fun to be in the hype of a game when it comes out, to play along with the rest of the world.
Well, and it's also like part of the interest of one of those games coming out is that they're so obtuse and they're so weird and like unlike other games, particularly in the storylines, like having to find your way around that and then hearing whispers from other people like, maybe there's something over here, maybe there's something, you know, like maybe there's a weapon I can find through this weird means.
Yeah.
That experimentation, that's kind of part of the game. And definitely, when you're playing games 5 years later when they've been rinsed and every secret has been found out, it's slightly less... I mean, it's still brilliant if you don't know.
Yeah.
But I think it's slightly less exhilarating.
I totally agree. Like, a lot of the story and the narrative in these games is implied. Mm. It's very ambiguous. So to play a game where no one else really knows what's going on, and maybe you can be part of that community that's trying to figure things out, I think that would be an awesome experience. So yeah, I would definitely say dive into Dark Souls 3, and then once you have fun with that, you can go back to Bloodborne. I think that's a good way to do it. But I'm glad you're enjoying the series. Praise the sun. So I have number two, and this is from Edward. And he says, before I listened to last week's podcast, I was happily watching Daredevil, enjoying every single aspect of the show.
Oh, no.
including Foggy. Oh, geez. Then I listened to your podcast, in which you pointed out everything that was annoying about the character. Since then, I can no longer watch the show without cringing every time he says a line or pulls a stupid face.
That's like the opposite of inspiration. We've done that too. We can ruin a show for someone.
Don't get me wrong, I still love Daredevil. I'm greatly enjoying John Bernthal's Punisher, and I think that Charlie Cox was made to play Daredevil. I completely agree. Mm. Yet I must say that last week's discussion has tainted my enjoyment of it slightly. I'm sorry that we did that to you, Edward. Mm. P.S. I also heard you say on last week's show that The Grey was a terrible film. I'd just like to say that I think it's actually one of Liam Neeson's best films in years.
I think I...
Was it you that said The Grey was...
I said I'd heard it was... Well, maybe I just said it was a terrible film. I've never watched it.
I haven't seen it either.
It's not a terrible film.
Is it not?
No, it was disappointing in that the trailer suggested it was a film about Liam Neeson fighting a wolf.
With wine bottles strapped to his hands.
And it barely really happens in the film. Okay. Like, it does... Doesn't... It, that's not what the film is.
Yeah.
It's a really, really good film.
Is
it's so dark and grim, and it's a bit weird, and it's just very unusual. Like, it's different. But I recommend checking The Grey out. I'm with you, Edward.
I apologize.
It's better than watching, you know, Liam Neeson do what he's been doing a lot of lately.
I just assumed it was that, but against a wolf
It's a lot more going on in The Grey than you think. There's more than meets the eye. It's about... It's a really sort of quite a powerful film about death.
Well, where do you stand with the lovable Foggy? What side are you on? Team Foggy?
We talked about him at length on the Super Hero show, so I've said all I need to say. I don't need to keep being negative, but yeah, I was not a fan of his.
Okay.
Paul McLaughlin writes in and says, long-time listener, first-time writing in.
Hi, Paul.
My question is, do you think DC would have been better off releasing Suicide Squad sooner than Batman v Superman? Regardless of quality, Batman v Superman was always going to make a ton of money. I feel that the poor reviews of the film and mixed feelings of fans will hurt the momentum of Suicide Squad. Perhaps it would have been better for Suicide Squad to come out first and benefit from the combined momentum of the two films.
That's interesting.
That's kind of quite interesting.
That's like some quite complex business analysis going on.
It's quite interesting. I first read this and thought, and then I was like, oh, hold on.
He's actually got a point. Like, there is a sense that, yeah, you're right. Even though Batman versus Superman, has taken $500 million already or something, like, it could hurt.
You know, there'll be very specific reasons why they couldn't do it.
Yeah.
But as a concept, maybe it would have made more sense to do it the other way around.
It's as you said, I'm sure there's 1,000 reasons why it is the way it is. But if it was simple as putting one first, absolutely. They definitely should have led with Suicide Squad. I think that would have been a much more exciting.
But is that just hindsight?
I guess, but also you would have gotten a glimpse at Ben Affleck's Batman as well, and like what he's about, and I think that would have been a nice setup for Batman v Superman. But I guess equally, you know, you've got some setup towards the Justice League in Batman v Superman.
But then I suppose isn't like Will Smith meant to be one of the most bankable actors in the world? So like maybe they just don't care. Maybe they're just like, we're going to put out a Will Smith film. It doesn't even matter. We'll make as much money out of him.
Was the most bankable.
Was. Oh, who is it now? Oh, it's Robert Downey. Oh, no, he's the highest paid.
It's not really a thing anymore.
Is it not?
No.
Why not? I want to know.
Because what we said earlier, these films have become event films rather than actor films.
Yeah, so, that's fair.
You know, having Tom Cruise or Will Smith, you know, they've had both big budget science fiction flops in the last sort of 5 years, and it's, you know, he was Mr. 4th of July, Will Smith. But
yeah.
Yeah, no,
it's not even Independence Day.
It's the characters have taken over from the actors. It's interesting. He also suggests IGN United for the podcast name.
I think we're going with Baby Presidents, aren't we?
We've been speculating.
That's because me and Rory have been very
sleep
tired.
Deprived and on
just
flights.
Going, yeah, Baby Presidents. The Baby President podcast name.
I'd listen to that.
Yeah.
We have our final bit of feedback from you, Joe.
Here we go. This is from Scott Zeal, which is an awesome name.
Really cool name.
From Rugby, UK. As per your discussion about the Celeb VM website last week to people up, this is an incredibly sad website where slightly, let's say, less popular celebrities and Gary Busey you can pay for video messages from them.
Did you hear about this, Chris?
Yes.
It's so sad. It's
deeply depressing. he says, as per your discussion about it, I have to confess I've used the site.
Really?
The most recent Christmas past, I discovered the site and found Boise from Only Fools and Horses, and then paid the site for him to record a Christmas message for my dad, who is a colossal fan. It was an ironic and fun message, which he actually loved, as Boise did it really well. What I love about that is that he can't remember the guy's name. He just called him Boise.
I don't think it's sad to use at all. I think the circumstances are quite sad, but
To do the voice messages.
Yeah, in this context, that's perfect. That's exactly like it would mean so much to someone.
I think Boise follows me on Twitter.
Does he?
John Chalice. I certainly follow
him. John Chalice. See, you know his name. That to me is the perfect, like, if you're the kind of celebrity who's only remembered by one character's name that you've played, you are perfect for Celeb VM. That's your home.
Well, that's the joke, isn't it, in Extras, that he's Barry from EastEnders.
Yeah, of course.
They never use his name, and he's Barry from EastEnders.
Barry from EastEnders.
Yeah. Follow John Chalice. He does some nice Boise-related tweets.
Does he?
A lot of personal appearances. No. He's written a book called Being Boise. I know more about him than I should.
He really leans into it.
But he was my favourite character on 94's Horses.
He is good.
So, well, I'm glad he got a good message.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think we were certainly talking about getting one done for the podcast, but we can't decide who we want, like, because we can't afford Busey and we definitely can't afford Rodman. I think Gav really wants that cowboy kid that had the really sad story about.
Oh, the cowboy kid from Willy Wonka. He's on there.
He's no good.
Apparently he goes to conventions.
Just sits on the table by himself.
In his cowboy suit.
Yeah. That's the only reason to have him. Like, it would be perfect for the podcast because no one would get to see him.
I don't know. These people are just making a buck.
It's a way of life.
Yes. I find it extremely fun. Thank you, Scott.
Anyone else, if you've had a message from a celebrity.
Or if you get one.
Yeah, let us know. Get one for IGN. the email address, as ever, is IGN_UKfeedback@IGN.com. And I think that's it. Anything else for anyone else?
I am totally good. That's everything this week.
This has been the Baby Presidents podcast.
Thank you for listening and watching and taking part.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait. The excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to Season 1, we are thrilled to announce the launch of Season 2. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you, and let's make Season 2 even more memorable together.